You're listening to the Talking Forest podcast with your host, Kendra Burns. In today's world, it's important to communicate your story online, and Kendra can help you by diving into social media and providing you with free tips and insights on how to build your organic social media following and shine online. Having been raised low income, first in her family to go to college, and a proud international military spouse, Kendra develops creative media content across many social media platforms from anywhere in the world. Her inspiration comes from the people who give her hope and believe in her so she can believe in you. Follow the Talking Forest podcast today to see how she lives the dream of a traveling virtual entrepreneur and get your tech tips as we keep up with the latest on social media.
Hi, and welcome to the Talking Forest podcast. This is your host, Kendra Burns, and we are on an episode with Tyler. He's working for Forisk, and he was excited to come on the podcast. And as well, one of his coworkers named Amanda will also be included this month in September. So I'm really excited to hear their stories at the company, respectively. They're different, and get their point of view. So this is episode
53,
and I'm going to introduce Tyler, and then we'll go into asking the questions and seeing what he's all about. So he's currently working as a timber industry analyst at Forisk. He started out as an intern in March of 2019, and then after that, he was hired on full-time. His undergraduate degree was a BA in biology from Georgia Southern University. He got his master's in science and forest resources and an MFR in forest business, both from the Warnell School of Forestry and Natural Resources at the University of Georgia. This May, he finished up his PhD in forest finance and economics, also from Warnell. His master's work was centered around examining the cost of chipping operation on an experimental track in South Carolina, while his PhD was focused on how working forest conservation easements and their characteristics affect surrounding property value. He has primarily done his graduate research assisting his time with graduate school, both in the master's and PhD level. However, prior to that, coming to the UGA, he worked as a woman's assistant soccer coach in Georgia Military College in Milledgeville, Georgia. With his hobbies, Emily and his wife go hiking on the weekends. They enjoy taking trips up to North Georgia mountains, spending the day out there. And he's recently started gardening more, enjoying readings and spending time with his wife, Emily, and their two cats, Goblin and Petunia. In social media, he would like to get to know more people in the industry, and hopefully social media and events like this podcast will help with the networking. Forestry is such a broad field that is always beneficial to talk more people and get to know more people because everyone has a unique perspective. And Tyler, I fully agree with you, so that's why I created Talking Forests and was happy to bring you on. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So I was excited when you reached out. I was interested in your position and how you got it. So do you want to talk about how you went from the school into going into an intern and then accepting a full-time position in the company you're in now?
So I started in March of 2019. I had reached out to Forisk Consulting. I had met Brooks, the CEO of Forisk Consulting, at a conference. I reached out and asked if they were taking intern positions. Luckily, they were. And so I started in March, worked a couple hours a week then, and then started working full-time that summer of 2019. And once school started back up in the fall, I continued to work part-time, just a couple hours a week, until actually this July, where I started full-time with them. So I'd gotten about a year of experience working with them, and I got to know the team really well, and it's great people. I really enjoy the team. It's a small, tight-knit group, and everyone is very close. So it was a really good experience to be able to come in knowing the team beforehand, knowing how things somewhat operate prior to starting full-time.
And it's really exciting that you were able to do that because 12 years ago, these positions, going from school to internship to full-time, were less available and not really widely known if they were. So it's exciting to see that you took that step and that you had a great little stepping stone and went from your education into a full-time role pretty quickly out of out of the degrees. I think that's really commendable.
Thank you. I've been very fortunate. At Warnell, a lot of the Forest Business students end up doing an internship. So I think that's been an incredibly valuable part of the Warnell education, is that the Forest Business students do internships, so they do get that industry exposure. And that, I think that really goes a long way towards having a job once you get out of school.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I looked at your education, and with the forest finance and economics, I think that would make sense that you've moved into the role you're in now. Do you want to talk about, from that education, gleaning anything out of that to become a timber industry analyst?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So I had a bit of a hybrid program at Warnell. I did a lot of forest finance, but also took classes up at the Terry School in economics as well. And my current role is as a timber industry analyst at Forisk. Like pretty much everyone here, we all wear a couple of different hats, and collectively there's quite a large amount of overlap among team members. So personally, I'm responsible for monitoring timberland transactions and maintaining the timberland owner database. Additionally, I assist with mill updates, provide some support on consulting projects, work with data for our market bulletin, and eventually we'll transition towards working on our timber supply models. And my education at UGA has really been incredibly valuable towards preparing me for that, because you get the exposure towards not only the finance, but also the forestry sector as well. So it provides a pretty good, well-rounded experience going into a position like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Modeling is not easy. There's a lot of moving parts and things that you have to figure out in the economy. So are you moving into that position? Is that going to be a regional effort when you go into the modeling, or is that in the United States modeling, or is it going to be per timber track?
So we work in the U.S. and Canada. We're primarily based in the Southeast, but we also have been expanding out into the Western U.S. as well and into the Northeast. We do most of our work just in terms of volume in the Southeast, just because that's where most of our connections are, and pretty much everyone in the company is originally from the area. But we have done international work in the past. That was prior to my time, but primarily in the U.S.
Oh, okay, so you can do U.S.-based modeling, and moving out to the West is a good idea. I'm from Washington State, so I'm a little biased.
I understand.
There's some big timber out there.
It's a beautiful country out there. Absolutely.
Yeah, so you kind of have to shift. And so I did the opposite of what you did, actually. I interned at Rainier Inc. And so I think back then, 40% of the company was in the Northwest and 60% was in the South. So I've always had that connection to the South wherever I go, because of the industry. It's just the way it is. And that's where, you know, we get our diverse timber needs from different regions. So that's really cool. And moving into more about, previous jobs and what you've been doing, the PhD was focused on working forest conservation easements and their characteristics surrounding property value. Was that the thesis that you were working on?
Yes, ma'am. That was my thesis. I started off with a kind of a literature review as my first component of that, reviewing what the scientific literature had said about conservation easements and their effects on surrounding property value. And so from that, we built out into kind of establishing a topology of what characteristics were frequently present on working forest conservation easements in terms of allowing timber harvests or having SMZs, having recreation, that sort of thing. And finally ended up with doing an econometric model, seeing how the presence of having conservation easements nearby, specifically working forest conservation easements, is affecting surrounding property value.
Yeah, and that's something that I remember studying in the Northwest, and we are trying to do more easements to prevent development. Is that also
huge issues, particularly particularly in the Southeast.
So I think that we have a solution, though. If we, since you studied it, that means that you have something out there for people to look at and understand more about it.
It's certainly an area that's a potential. I wouldn't say it's a panacea by any means, but I think of it as kind of another tool in the toolbox towards conserving forest land.
Yeah, I think so too. And I like the conservation side of it. I went into my bachelor's and did some of that work and worked as a conservation intern and absolutely was blown away at the parks in Seattle is where I worked for a summer. I know that the conservation side is also something that we're needing. And I think what I'm excited about in 2020 is that we're finding a balance between harvesting and conserving and figuring out the right rotation for the right region.
I think as we continue to advance, we're potentially becoming more aware of kind of the ecological consequences while also balancing economic. So it's certainly been very encouraging to see that transition.
Yeah, so my next question rolls right into that. What are the major issues that are facing our forests today?
So I'm glad you asked me this because I think it's something of which we certainly need to be aware of. And right off the bat, you kind of think of these big, scary things, such as like maybe hurricanes, fire, pests and disease, such as like the mountain pine beetle up in Canada. But I think what often gets overlooked is the issue of development and lack of markets, particularly in the Southeast. I think that's probably one of the biggest threats to the forestry in the Southeast is just when you don't have these strong timberland markets. As more and more areas are converted to development, you get smaller tracts, and it's much harder to manage for timberland on these smaller tracts. You're not doing as much thinning. You're not doing as much herbicide application. It's much more difficult for loggers to come in and harvest these smaller tracts. And then kind of the flip side of that is that how difficult it is to be a forest landowner, particularly in the Southeast. Saw timber prices have been relatively stagnant to declining probably over the last decade. And you couple that with increasing property taxes, and particularly in Georgia. Georgia has one of the highest property tax rates in the Southeast. So you have this real issue because it's very tempting for a forest landowner to perhaps transition their land out of forest land to a much more appealing, perhaps more profitable land use, such as farming or residential. And when that happens, it's immediately profitable to them on the short term, but you're diminishing the forestry sector. And with that, you're removing those incentives. When those landowners don't have the incentive to manage their property, like manage for healthy forests, I think that's probably a very overlooked issue in terms of preserving forests right now.
Yeah, and I completely hear you on that. That's something that all of the mountainous regions are dealing with because, yeah, it's a beautiful place to live, but that's where a lot of the foothills and the upper watersheds are, which we should be preserving and keeping forests as forests. So I think that your work and your analytical education and your new position are absolutely just going to make a difference in what you just said. And I think that you're a great advocate for it because you've studied it. You've seen the impacts that it makes. And so basically some of the smaller tree farmers are also having to go up against some of the overarching rules that get put in place in certain states where they aren't necessarily industry, so they don't own 100 acres. You know, they own maybe 40 or less, and they're still put in this box of this is how you should maintain your land. And it was based on conservation, which does make sense. But also, let's say that 40 acres was either their retirement or maybe it was someone's student education funds for maybe one of their grandchildren or children. And when Tyler is saying, some of that overreach that we're needing to kind of look into and help these tree farmers is they aren't able to manage that land and actually harvest it anymore. It turns into a protected area, and so let's say they have a creek going through their property. They have to put 100-foot buffers on it, and that's a state law. They can't do anything about it. And so then those trees that they were looking to, you know, get some funds for their education or their retirement is now no longer available. And so that's really hard when something comes down in rulemaking and then all these little guys get impacted. And I think that it's great that Forest is helping those landowners.
Absolutely. There's a lot of pressure on forest landowners, and, you know, they can get some relief perhaps through enrolling their lands and hunting leases and offsetting some of those taxes, or perhaps enrolling in like a conservation use assessment. But it's hard. It's really hard on landowners. So it's very important for us as an industry to stay diligent in terms of we're continuing to look out for forest landowners and making sure they have incentives to manage their forest land profitably and making sure those forests are intact and healthy.
Yeah. And why is it so important to incentivize them? Because they are filtering clean water for the public through their property.
Absolutely.
And there's not a lot of talk about that. And so I've actually worked with some consultants on ecosystem services. I think that's also a new thing coming where we can show the benefit of these small tracts of land and the landowners that are helping, and hopefully that those incentives become more of a reality in the future. They need more of that because they are sequestering carbon and they are filtering the water that would go to the city that people are drinking. And it's a very valuable role, but in the past it hasn't really been recognized because we didn't know how to do that. So I'm really happy that these services and Forest is available to consult on that now.
Yes, ma'am. We do tend to, just as a clarification, we do more towards the economic, but you are absolutely correct. It's extremely important to start recognizing these other benefits of forest land. It's often been overlooked, and it's important to recognize that forest land is often one of the most sustainable uses for land. People think of perhaps natural systems such as cropland, but in terms of forest land, we're using far less chemicals or herbicides. We're maintaining the land. It's sequestering carbon over time. So it's a much more sustainable use of land.
And absolutely, that would be really helpful to continue working on, and reports that come out, even economic reports that come out, are good for people to see because it shows proof that we're doing the right thing and moving forward. And so that brings me to my next question. With the issues that you were talking about, how would you like to see forestry change?
Probably the best thing we can do is to continually embrace change and development. Forestry has always been an incredibly hardworking and diligent industry, and we need to just maintain that attitude. Continue investing in improved silviculture. Look for alternative revenue streams where possible, whether that be hunting leases, mineral development rights, and possibly carbon mitigation credits in the future. Maintaining diligence on regulatory barriers and just making sure that forest landowners are protected. And that allows to continue to maintain healthy and strong markets. And that's gotten us where we are today. And I believe if we continue to maintain this diligence and this attitude, we can continue a vibrant and thriving forest industry.
Yeah, and I think that all of the educational programs that have come on are really helping too in the education system. So back when I started, there was not as many forest resource classes, there weren't as many natural resource classes. And I think you having that, I called it interdisciplinary approach when I was going to college. But I think these programs that are expanding are also a good foundation for what you're talking about as well.
UGA has a double program. We're, of course, business. The students are able to take classes at the business school. So you get that, of course, business exposure, and then also students that came in with more of a finance background can still take some classes at the business school, but then they can gain more experience towards the forestry sector. So in terms of providing that resource coming out of school, to me, it's really one of a kind.
Yeah, and it really showed me what was available, and the program that I was in 12 years ago only had an associate's in applied science, and it's grown into a bachelor's of applied science in a two-year college. You can now get a four-year degree, and I am just so happy and elated to continue mentoring the students in those programs, because that's what I think will help educate to change the sector and to continue that change that we were talking about.
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. I know Abraham Baldwin Agricultural College here in Georgia, I think they have recently started offering a four-year degree as well, whereas before they were a two-year college. So just continuing to provide avenues for students to learn about forestry, it's just so critical, really.
That's exciting. So I'm glad that we're rolling and doing good and adding more value to the sector and bringing young folks like you into the sector as well. So then let's talk just a little bit, before we wrap up, let's talk about your hobbies and how much fun you have you're out of school, but outside of work now. What do you guys do, and what part of the North Georgia Mountains do you go to?
There's a couple of different areas to go up. We were originally in Athens, so there's a lot of places about an hour and a half from there. Tallulah Gorge is a beautiful place. We've been to a couple times. Blood Mountain, Ravenclaw Falls, all those places are just absolutely gorgeous. Before the pandemic, I played soccer quite a bit more. I also used to be in a bit of a better shape before the pandemic. Also, perhaps that goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
But yeah, we always like to go up to the mountains and spend a day or perhaps spend a night up there. And if that's not available, working around the house, gardening, just having some time to read and kind of relax, it's been really nice.
Yeah, time to sit and be with the nature and gardening. And yeah, I've really enjoyed gardening myself. I've actually done kind of a rotation of tulips and daffodils. And then we go from tulips and daffodils to some hot peppers. So I'm talking balut jalopias and Scots bonnets and what else? Ghost peppers, habaneros.
Oh, okay. So you're brave with your spiciness.
Yeah, I grew up in the North, so I wasn't brave until my husband from Louisiana came in. And, you know, after 7 years of trying to spice up my life, that's definitely what happened with these peppers. So we make our own hot sauces, we make our own powders, and the powders can be in almost anything in any cuisine. So I definitely like some spicy crawfish boil. Yeah, that's some good stuff. So
We tend to stick to squash, peppers, tomatoes, that sort of thing. They can grow for a pretty long time here, so it just tend to be easier to make.
Yeah, so in the climate that you're in, is it a little bit more rainy?
We're a little bit more towards the north side of Georgia, so it is a little bit rainier. I grew up in middle Georgia. Yeah, in Athens, Lawrenceville, Gwinnett area, it does rain a little bit more than it does down south, but it's still Georgia, so it's still hot. So
yeah.
Change.
Yeah, I've been to Atlanta for the Forest Proud Conference, and I was really excited for the hospitality in the South and the restaurants and all the different food to taste. And then, yeah, walking outside, you kind of immediately sweat after you've been in some air conditioning.
It feels, you go go outside and you feel like you've taken a bath.
Yeah.
It's just, you grow up in it and you don't notice it as much, but even still, there's some parts of the day where it's just better to not go outside.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to wrap it up with the last question here. Is there any valuable tips that you have to tell our listeners, and is there anything else that you would like to add?
I'm going to borrow a bit from Forrest here. One of our values is to always be curious. So our industry is just absolutely immense, and there's just a multitude of different avenues to explore, and it can be somewhat overwhelming. But I think it's really important to resist the urge to just settle into one area. So for me, it's like when you get home, don't just sit down. Take the time to learn more about finance, economics, operations. Read the latest reports if you can. Always try to be learning more about the industry. There's just so much that you can learn. And we're part of such an incredible industry. I feel like we have a responsibility to ensure it stays that way. So always being curious, I think perhaps is one way that we can continue to do that.
Yeah, curiosity is good. And I think if you're always curious and looking for more information, that you'll also become educated and be an asset to your company.
That's the idea. You should tell Amanda that.
I've worked in a lot of companies and I have always been an outside the box thinker, but my actions are more formal. So it's been interesting when I interview and nail a job and then I get into a job and they're like, oh wow, you are really good at what you do and you're organized and you're professional. And then I start thinking of like things that they could do or outside of the box curiosity thoughts. And they're like, who's this?
Probably suffer from the opposite. I kind of work in a straight line a lot of times, and I'm very effective, I think, with that caveat, in getting my work done, and I always try to be punctual and that sort of thing, but I could probably use a bit more creativity in my day-to-day. I think it's encouraging that other members of the forest industry are perhaps missing for my lack of it.
Yeah, that's why it's good to have, even now with the pandemic, virtual town halls and still coming together, like in Society of American Foresters. I'm still the Washington State Communications Chair, and so I've been really showing them the way for 5 years, actually, how to communicate on social media and how to utilize it.
Great.
And now it's like, oh, wow, we actually do need this.
You know, I think the pandemic obviously has been incredibly damaging, but I think it's opened up a lot of people's eyes to the nature of kind of perhaps expanding technology in the workplace. I know I can talk a little bit about Forrest here. They have done an incredible job in being accommodating in terms of whether it's making sure that people have time to go pick up their kids or look after their kids when daycare's closed. Everyone has the opportunity to work remotely should they need. I just can't say enough good things about Forrest.
And I think just that in and of itself is part of the hospitality that I wish more companies would take on. And I think that it's great that you're in one of those.
Absolutely. I've been extremely fortunate to work with the group of people that I do. Just an incredible group of people. Just such a wide variety of talent. And it's very enriching, and I'm looking forward to continuing to work there.
Well, great. I'm glad that we had a great interview today, and it was nice to have you on. You've been a pleasure to talk to, and I like that you have the Southern aspect of it, and you're doing great. So I enjoyed it, and hopefully we'll have a good interview with your coworker Amanda, and we'll be able to hear from her as well. And I'm glad that you guys wanted to be on, so thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having us.
All right. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you.